Okay, good morning, everybody. This Shabbos, we have this special schus of learning and reading Parshas Pinchas. Parshas Pinchas is a loaded parsha, action-packed. It rivals the other parshios in the Torah, like a Baloscha or a Chukas, that every few psukim, there's another episode. You have Pinchas, you have another counting of the Jewish people, the note Slovchad, the leadership turning over to Yehoshua, his appointment from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu. We have all the Korbanos Musaf mentioned in our Parsha for all the Yamim Tovim. In fact, Parshas Pinchas is the most frequently read from Parsha. Many shuls, I think we have one, many shuls have one Torah that's like the Pinchas Torah for the whole year. They don't move it. Because from Rosh Chodesh to Yontif, it's so frequently used. If you have enough Sifrei Torah, in your Aron, then you have one that just is the Pinchas Torah all year round. And they rotate it from year to year, but important to note. And with that, we'll just highlight the uniqueness of Parshas Pinchas. In the Iturei Torah, he quotes HaRav Yud Yeager. I don't know who that is, but he says the following idea. Pinchas is always usually the first of the 3 weeks, 95-99% of the time. Matos Maaseh and Dvarim. Those three are the three parshios of the 3 weeks. Pinchas is usually sandwiched between two double parshios. You have Chukas Valak on one side, and you have Matos Maaseh on the other. This year's a leap year, you have an exception. But generally, Pinchas stands alone amongst two double parshas, five parshas in 3 weeks. Pretty intense. Why is that? What is the message there? So Rav Eger points out is that Pinchas was a zealot. He was a kanoi. A kanoi acts alone. Generally, when one needs to speak up for the truth and act based on the truth, there are very few people that are willing to go with them to declare and announce and stand up for that MS. Pinchas is alone amongst many to highlight this point. Even when Moshe Rabbeinu was tasked with going to speak to Paro, and all of the Zakenim said, let's go, and we're going to go with you to speak to Paro, to tell Paro, the evil dictator, let my people go. What happened as they approached the palace? Moshe turned around. Yet Aaron and his brothers with him, everybody else ran away. Even when speaking up to an evil Paro, people run away. We mentioned last week, Bilam said, that the Jewish people are Vadad Yishkon. Hein Am Levadad Levadad Yishkon. That the Jewish people ourselves, we stand up, and generally, we are alone. Right? Thankfully, we have some friends. United States of America is a very good friend to Israel. We have some friends. But generally, when it comes to standing up for morals, for ethics, what is true and right in this world, we are alone. We are alone. And that's what Bilam said. Sometimes it takes an outsider to share what it is. And maybe that's what really the Parsha itself represents amongst the double Parshios. Additionally, the Bnei Yisrael and the Rizhna Rebbe, Rabbi Saul of Rizhna, point out over here two other elements to Pinchas. Number one, Pinchas has the Korbanos Musaf. It's the beginning of the 3 weeks. How many days are the 3 weeks? Mendy's going to write a dissertation on this topic. I know every year. We gave it, right, 22 or 21. Okay, it's a big discussion. You count the first day. You count Tisha B'Av as one of the days. It's really Sunday to Sunday, so you count both those days. It's 22 days, right? Yeah, we're good. So if you go back into the amount of Moadim that we have, the amount of days of Yontif that we have, right? Someone's working in the secular world. You need to know how many days off you're going to have throughout the year. This year is going to be a rough year for that notion. Now, there are 21 days. These correspond one echad l'sheni. There are 21 good days and 21 not yet good days. of the Bein, that's the Bein HaMetzara, Adayin Lo. They're not yet good days. So he says that that's where we're stepping off. Pinchas is part of that because Pinchas reminds us of the Korbanos Musaf. That's a central element to the Parsha. The Bnei Yisrael adds that not only is it that, but a central theme of Pinchas and Matos, Maaseh, and Devarim is Eretz Yisrael. We see it very clearly. Why are they counting the people? We need to take a census of who's going to go into Eretz Yisrael. Who's part of that? Benot Sofchar. Benot Sofchar. They loved Eretz Yisrael. In Matos and Maaseh, we see them talking about divvying up the land of Israel. Who's going to go? Where are they going to go? Reuven, Gad, Chatzis, Shev, Menashe, not going in. The Devarim is about moving that forward as we're on literally the doorstep to go to Eretz Yisrael. So really the theme of Pinchas and all of the 3 weeks is a theme of Yamim Tovim, that the best is yet to come. And additionally, it is a theme of Eretz Yisrael, something that specifically during this year is much more on their mind than the rest of the year, pining and yearning for the land of Israel. Yes.
Associated with this, but
the six passages in the
Torah have names associated with
them. Yeah. Okay. So Yisro, Kala, Bila, but yeah.
Kaisara. Say that, you know, so it's like, what's the common denominator? Why just these six?
Why? It's a great question.
Why these six?
Okay. I mean, I'll throw it out. Anyone know? What is unique about these people that they get Parshios named after them? Noach is the first, Pinchas is the last. Is it Noach in Pinchas? I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah. They all stood up against the tide. Yeah, sorry too. Okay, they all stood up against the tide. Yisro, Balak, he stood up to kill the Jewish people. Everyone else was passively wanted to kill, murder the Jewish people. He said, no, we got to do it. No. Okay, good. Korach.
He stood out to rebel. But
it
could either be good or bad.
Yeah, he's not saying it's a good thing. There's a midah there. We quoted the Lubavitcher Rebbe 2 weeks ago, I think, by Korach, who says, like, why would you name a parsha after a rasha, right? So he writes that because Korach had something special within him, and that was the striving for Kedusha. That's something that it was misguided, but that midah, that passion, that zealotry for wanting to get closer to Hashem is something that we need to bring into our own lives in the right sphere. Who named the Parshios? I don't know. It's a good question.
I mean, it wasn't early.
No, it was a printer probably that named them. But Lubavitcher Rebbe many times, and other Svarim also, mainly Sifrei Chassidus, give a lot of kavod to the names given.
Yeah,
and even earlier on, you see some Rishonim, I think in the Rokeach and others, where they do mention the name of the Parsha. It may not always be the name that we give it, but they always have like a name to the Parsha. Yeah, Jules?
Has anybody established a common strand of the old Parshas with names? Obviously, you have Tzaddikim, you have Risharim, so there can't be a common strand.
So Abe Weintraub, thank you for asking again. It's hard to hear from here to here. Abe Weintraub suggested the following, Rabbi Abe Weintraub. He suggested that why do we have all these people? Because they all stood out. They all did something to stand out amongst their peers or amongst the world. And then maybe that is what's unique about them. Therefore, they get that accolade and that cover.
Even though it's positive and negative, lumping them together.
100%. Yeah, that is a very nice suggestion. Okay, let's go on. Says the Torah, Pinchas ben Alazar ben Aaron HaKohen, Hishibes Chamasi Me'al ben Yisrael, Bekano es Kinasi, Uchibisi es ben Yisrael bekinasi. So what is Pinchas ben Elazar, like, subdued Hashem's anger by what? By being zealous for Hashem, and therefore I'm not going to destroy Bnei Yisrael. I skipped a word. I skipped a word purposely in this pasuk. What word did I skip? Bisocham, because the pasuk fits without the word Bisocham. Right? Bikanoas Kinesi, right, through his avenging my, you know, my honor, Lochizan, they didn't destroy them. Bikanoas Kinesi, Bisocham, amongst them. What does that mean? What is the Torah? What does the Torah add? Right? Pasuk could be translated perfectly without that word. Right? So what does the Torah mean by adding the word bisocham? What's going on there? Who stopped them? So what's bisocham? What does that mean, bisocham? That Pinchas stopped it? So the Malach HaMavos was there, so he stopped the Malach HaMavos, which was bisocham. So the Sforno writes the following. The Sforno writes that everybody else, right, you had two groups of people. The people that were getting involved with the Benos Moav, which, right, was one thing. And then you had everybody else. They did nothing. They did nothing. So the Sforno says, bisocham, that all the other people did not say a word for everything else going on. And Pinchas stood from amongst the people, right? Yeah, he had good yichus. Yeah, he was part of that lineage, but he was not yet a Kohen. He had no specific honorific given to his name before or after, but he stood up amongst the people. And that's what, you know, is a greater point, that he stood up, for it. That's what the Torah is pointing out here with the word bisocham. Rav Druk adds the following two other points. One is his and one is someone else's. He says, bisocham, what can easily happen when somebody acts this way with zealotry and kills someone righteously, and it's correct, the Pi Halacha, there's an old Gemara in Sanhedrin that deals with this, Kanaim Pogimbo. What can easily happen to somebody like this? They can become an outcast, right? They can become like somebody that's completely separated from everybody else. Bisocham, from amongst the people, comes from the language of a pasuk, Bisoch Ami Anochi Yosheves, that he was a coming from a place of being a member of Klal Yisrael, a card-carrying member of the Jewish people, but he didn't lose his standing amongst everyone else. Additionally, bisocham, he didn't let this get to his head. He was still, after he finished this, still an average guy. Oh yeah, he had more followers on social media, on Twitter, Instagram. I don't know what Pinchas would use back then, but it didn't get to his head. He went back into the crowd. He stood up from bisocham, and when he came back in, he was also bisocham. He didn't let this get to his head. He was Pinchas, and he remained the Pinchas that he was.
Rabbi Jay Hirschhorn, is Pinchas the only zealot in the Torah?
There is only one in the Chamishei Chumshei Torah. There is another one in all of Tanakh. Who is the zealot that's mentioned in Tanakh? What? Eliyahu Hanavi. Eliyahu, it's the 3 weeks. I can't sing the song for you. Eliyahu Hanavi is the other zealot. And that's one of many reasons, that we say that Pinchas was Eliyahu, either literally Eliyahu. We mentioned this in the Shoftim Shir. Now Pinchas comes up at the end of Shoftim, like he must be like 600 years old at that time. He's pretty old. And 600, like 440, like somebody, like, you know. So that's why it's easily he could become Eliyahu. Or he was a Gilgal. He had the same neshama, the same aspects of Eliyahu Hanavi. Yeah. In fact, the Haftorah that is supposed to be the Haftorah for Pinchas, if it's not during the 3 weeks, which is very rare and infrequent, would be from the stories of Malachim about Eliyahu Hanavi. Now, the Imri Emes has a third thought about bisocham. The Imri Emes says that when Pinchas acted this way, with this passion and fire and deep commitment to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. When he finished, everybody else that was there also got a little kanas, also learned, and got a little extra passion from Pinchas. And that's what it means, Imre Amir says, bisochem, that from amongst them, he gave them a little extra kick in their step. Right? So three interpretations of what bisochem means. Either it means that nobody else was saying a thing, and Pinchas needed to stand up amongst them, probably the most literal interpretation. Or bisochem means that Pinchas remained himself through and through, regardless. 1 second, Milti. And the third is they also got a little kanos as well when he finished his act. Yeah. Yeah.
So he wasn't so righteous, but he was under the.
Okay, so Milty, you're making a different suggestion. I'm not sure, going back to the question of all the names of the people of the Parshas, that maybe Noach was a little bit murky in his, his legacy. Pinchas also, his legacy also was a little bit muddied. I don't know how that works with everybody else. Yeah. Noach's name is embedded in Pinchas, yeah. Yeah, okay. If the, I don't know what that means. I mentioned that. I'm not sure what that means. You know? Yeah. There's a similar message here that he arose above. He arose above. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Right, very good point. Right. Noach was called upon to do it. Pinchas is not called upon. In fact, if Pinchas was called upon to do this, he couldn't do it halachically. He wouldn't be allowed to. It's only if you don't ask the meaning you have to know the halacha. It's called Kanaim Pogimbo in unique situations. A few different cases come up in the Mishnah. In the ninth paragraph of Pesach Sanhedrin, talk about this. And if you ask the question, you can't do it because then it requires just passion, instinctiveness to go ahead and do it. Matisya was a.
But he was a. He killed somebody. The story that we're told that, right? Somebody did some kind of sacrifice and killed him. Then started a revolution.
Right.
So maybe Sochem is that he started a revolution.
Which is a very good thing. I mean, it didn't lead. And you can imagine today that if there was a country, a city, whatever, where people were doing immoral things. One guy gets up and, you know, right, whatever, it was right to do. It was a case of whatever you could think of, whatever it could be. What would happen afterwards? It would be a revolt. Everybody else would go ahead and feel like I could do it also. It didn't happen. It stopped and stayed with one person, which is very impressive.
We have an example of what we call not a good term, or a false speaker. We called him a Katnai, and it was not. Goldstein said he called him home, but what he did was not what would have been the proper thing to do. So we call Katnai's not a good trade.
So generally, it's not a good trade. And that's what I wanted to now make this point. Moving forward into the Parsha. Right, kanos is generally something that is very hard to do right. Right? Someone that has that passion is one thing. Zealotry, which is like acting on, you know, for the sake of God, is very, very tricky. And easily someone could fall down a slippery slope. Easily. When Moshe Rabbeinu is asking for a new leader for, you know, to take his place. the Torah says that he should have, you know, Yifkod Hashem Elokei Ruchos L'chol Basar, Ishal Ha'idam, right? Ishal Ha'idam, Yishar Yetzu Lifneihem, Yishar Yavu Lifneihem. Rashi says, what's Ishal Ha'idam? Manhig, Shehei Sovel Kol Echad V'Echad L'Fidait. Need a leader that can tolerate each and every person. And the Kutzke Rebbe says on this Rashi that when Moshe saw the chashivas that Pinchas was receiving, he was nervous that he would be chosen as the next leader of the Jewish people. And Moshe, as the only leader currently for Am Yisrael, knew that that was dangerous. To have a kanai, right, as a leader, he was afraid of what could happen next. Therefore, he emphasized a major, like a very important trait within leadership, and that is tolerance and patience, right? That a leader, more than anything else, right? Pinchas was the extreme exception. How many, Jay, you made a great point. How many other kanais in the Torah? One. That's it. Done. No more. Because it is so rare, so unique, when it could be used and applied, that and to have a leader like that, unfortunately, we've seen times in our history where we've had leaders, or we've seen kanaim in other leadership roles of other countries, and that is a very dangerous road to go down, unfortunately. And so ultimately, he said, whoever's going to take over for me needs to be somebody that is patient and tolerant and can understand. Sovel comes from burden. So it can understand the burdens of other people and the burdens that are brought to you as a leader that become a burden to you, and can hold on to it and not act. Yes.
How many categories Shimon? Are they just hotheads? Is it just a hothead and a zealot?
So one of the more impactful Divrei Torah that I heard in my life, in my youth, probably in high school, going to 10th grade, was the following idea. Well, Mendy asked, well, Shimon, was Shimon also a hothead? Was he a zealot? So it was Shimon and Levi acting in Maaseh Shechemet. It ties directly into our parsha. That's why I'm going to elaborate on this. So if you track those two people, like what happens next? The next stop for Shimon and Levi is they both, what do? They push Yosef into the pit, right? No good. But they think this is right. They do it. Then they get a passive-aggressive bracha from Yaakov Avinu that saying that what they're doing is they have to be careful about their passion, and it's very dangerous. Next, we go to Tarshish Kitisa B'Cheta Ega. What does Levi do? Yila Shem Elai, right? We don't do anything. This is wrong, right? The job of a leader, or especially someone that has fire and passion within them, what they need to learn, most of us, right? Many people are apathetic to Judaism, to life, and we need to light a fire under them, right? Got to light a fire under them. People that have a fiery personality, their job is to learn that it's not always to be used. Levi had control. Levi said, everyone's doing this, not us. Not us. And you see this go throughout. Levi gets elevated. They become somebody that represents Avodas Hashem, passion for what's right. And Shimon sort of like falls off. And we get to our parsha, and who is Pinchas killing? Who are the two people? Kazbi Batsur and Zimri ben Salu, Nasi Beis Av L'Shimoni. Zimri is the Nasi, the leader of Shimon. If you look at the numbers in the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar and Parshas Pinchas now about the counts, the tribe that goes down the most is Shimon. And it seems like that the Magefa, or the most people that acted, you know, with the Benos Moav, were people from Shimon. That this affected them the most. Meaning this passion, like for, you have a train going the same way. Levi went this way. And Shimon went off the rails, right? To the extent that, according to some, if you go down to Vizos Bracha, it's not clear that Shimon gets a bracha. He's one of the Shvatim. They're all Jews. We love them. But this is a lesson that we need to learn about these two paths that were taken. Rashi says that Shimon got a bracha, but it's not explicit in the psukim themselves in the Zosa bracha. Yeah. Oh, very good. Yeah. So Pinchas and Shimon, you see Levi and Shimon coming together, coalescing here. And you see this is really, they're on the opposite ends of the country at this point with the train ride and where their lives took them. Yeah. According to Chazal, yeah. According to Chazal, they tried to kill Pinchas. Good. Very good. Very good. Okay, let's move on. Thank you. That's a great question. Good. Rabbi Rafi Lipner shared that with me. Rabbi Rafi Lipner is a Rav in Toronto, I think, today. Okay. If, he's listening. Good. So says the Torah the following. In the counts of the census that was taken, the Torah says the following. Ubnei Eliav, Nimuel, Bedasam Baviram, Hu Dasam Baviram, Kriyeha Ida, Asher Hitsu Amosha Vialaron, Badas Korach, Batasam Alasha. As we're counting the people and going through the Shvatim, the Torah says, oh, the Bnei Eliav, who were the Bnei Eliav? Dasam Baviram, and these are the same Dasam Baviram that were killed with Korach in the whole rebellion. That Tiftach Aretz Piha, and now the Torah is like, oh, by the way, now that we're talking about Korach, let's like tell you the whole story. Well, we just read it 2 weeks ago, right? Okay. The Tivlo Sam, that's Korach Bemosaida. They were swallowed up. Korach was swallowed up. Machal Ha'esh, it's Chamishim Masayim Ish Vayulinis. Right? And they're all swallowed up. Uvene Korach, Lo Mason. And children of Korach did not die. So a lot of Mefarshim here struggle. We need this history lesson. We know this already. It happened just pretty recently. Parenthetically, it's not the only time that we're going to see like a parenthetical comment about Bnei Korach and about Dasam Aviram, but what is it doing here? We're mentioning Dasam Aviram because that is the lineage of Reuven. And then we're talking about Korach. And by the way, new piece of information just came out. The children of Korach never died. What's going on here? So Rav Druk quotes his Chavrusa. Who was Rav Druk's Chavrusa? Chaim Kanievsky. Chaim quoted his father, who said something very, very powerful there. He said that the Dasam Vaviram had an excuse. He said, listen, who wouldn't follow Korach? If you lived next to Korach, you would have followed Korach too. He's so charismatic. He was so dynamic. He could convince me to do anything. I would have bought the Brooklyn Bridge from Korach if he was selling it to me in the middle of the desert. And, you know, so it's not my fault. It's out of my control. So look what the Torah says. Thus, if you're failed, who succeeded? Bnei Korach. Really? Thus, if you're really? Is that really true? The kids that lived in his house, they ultimately said no. They ultimately said, no, we're going to be chozer b'tshuva. We don't agree with what our father is, you know, teaching us. You know, we lived in that tent with our father, and ultimately we changed our minds. You could have too. People too often give excuses. I was born a certain way. I was taught a certain way. And therefore, oh, it's 20, 30, 50 years later. It's not my fault. That's the Dasan Vavir mentality. Right. Eventually, we own our own decisions. Bnei Korach are telling us that we own our decisions versus the mentality of Dasan Vavir. So So we began with Pinchas. Why is Pinchas smack in the middle of two double parshios? Why the Pinchas, Matos Masei Dvarim, the parshios for the 3 weeks? Then we discussed what is uniqueness about Bissochum. Then we focused on three answers to Bissochum. We spent some time there. Now we discussed why Bnei Korach Lo Mesu. Mention one other? Forgot. And we'll go to one more thought. Yeah. Oh, sorry, 1 second. We had Kutzker. The Kutzker Rebbe said he was nervous about Pinchas becoming the leader, and we needed somebody that was patient with the people.
Rabbi. Right.
Yeah, 1 second. Mendy has a question, then Jules. Yeah, Mendy.
Just a question by Carl. Why didn't they Carl, so this answer that question as well. So eventually
his
children come down, and I think that also is the Bob of Tu,
the Bob
of
Squid, whatever. Right. And from Rus came down, Dobbins came to Shia. So we'll get back to a point of children, the grandchildren, you know, it reaps benefits somewhere down the line. We'll get back to cinema. Yeah. Jules, you have a question?
Yeah, you were saying that Moshe was concerned that Pinchas would replace him, but he knew Hashem is going to choose Yeshua. I mean, why would Moshe be concerned?
He was concerned. Maybe the people.
It wasn't the people's choice. Hashem chose Yeshua.
No, before that, Hashem chose Yeshua. He was
Moshe was still. You're saying he still
he
wasn't
would arise from amongst the people.
Moshe wasn't 100% sure. You're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Last thought comes back to a Rashi. Rashi says the following. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron a Kohen. Why we attribute him to Elazar? To Aaron a Kohen. Lefisha yu ha-shvatim mevazim osav. The shvatim made fun of Pinchas. Her isem ben putizem. Shepitem avi imo agalim lavodazara. Laharig nasi shevet mi Yisrael. Levicha ba'akasav yichsu achar Aaron. The Shvatim made fun of him and said that Pinchas's grandfather, right, his mother's father, was Yisro. It's another connection to the names of the people. So his maternal grandfather was Yisro. And look who this guy is. He thinks he's somebody. His grandfather fattened up cows to make sure they were very large, to ensure that the Avodah Zarah that we were giving was even greater. So, why is this? How does that have relevance to anything that happened to Pinchas? How does this connect to his zealotry? And secondly, why are we focusing on the fact that he fattened the cows up to make them better, more luscious for the Avodah Zarah? Focus on the fact that he worshipped idols. So says Rav Druk that you see from here that passion itself is passed down from generation to generation. That was Dafka, the emphasis over here. The emphasis was, yeah, Yisro was living in a society that worshipped idols. Everybody worshipped idols. But Yisro had a passion for worshiping idols. He got excited about it. It wasn't enough just to be Yotze, check off the box, and to bring this cow to my idol. That wasn't enough for him. He would prepare weeks and months in advance to ensure that his cows that would be birthed for idols would be the best and the greatest amongst all of them. He had a passion for what he was doing. That trait was passed down to his grandson, Pinchas. Right? Ultimately, Yisro, we know where Yisro ended up. He ended up with us. But that passion is something that is passed down from one generation to the next. And that's what ultimately led to Pinchas becoming who he became. Ultimately, Pinchas after Elazar dies, Elazar HaKohen is the one that leads the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. Who becomes a Kohen Gadol after Elazar? Pinchas. Pinchas, according to many, was one of two spies that went into Yericho. Right? It was Pinchas and Kalev that went into Yericho for Yehoshua to help out and see what the state of the people were in Eretz Yisrael. Pinchas became a very close confidant and part of the leadership squad, leadership team amongst the Jewish people. He was not the leader, but he had this intense and immense passion for the Jewish people, for Hashem, for the mitzvos. And that's something that was definitely passed down from previous generations. Just to add to this point, and I think this is very powerful, is that there's a Tosefta that writes, Mipnei Ma Yehuda Zachal Malchus. What did Yehuda do to warrant and merit kingship? Why is it Lo Yasser Sheva Mi Yehuda? So the Gemara, the Tosefta gives many answers. He admitted that he was wrong. Good, very important. He stood up for Yosef, very important. The Tosefta concludes with a very fascinating answer. You know what we how he is Zochel Malchus? Because his grandson Nachshon, when everybody was afraid to jump into the water, his grandson Nachshon jumped in. What's the connection? Nachshon, two generations later. You see that he had the ability to lead. You see what he was talking about at a Shabbos table, week after week, with the children and the grandchildren. What were his passions? What did he care about? He created, right? It was Yehuda's actions that created somebody like a Nachshon that he could beat in the world that everybody else, 600,000, you know, probably 2-3 million people were on one side, afraid to go in. Hashem said, go. Nachshon said, right? How high? How far? And that was Mizaka, his grandfather. That the generations worked both ways. Yisro to Pinchas and Nachshon to Yehuda. Yeah. He stood up for what they thought was an evil dictator. Yeah, he stood up for Binyamin to Yosef itself. Yeah. Okay, with that, we wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. It should be a great Shabbos, inspiring Shabbos. And also, it's going to be very, very hot. So be careful. Maybe that was the earlier minyan. We're going to have water for you coming in, going out. And everyone should stay safe and enjoy the rest of the Shabbos.
Good Shabbos, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.